Hi, I'm Sasha Coca, host of the California Report magazine. Every week, we bring you stories about what connects us in the giant, diverse Golden State. Because what happens in California changes the world.
I love this place. We were once seen as like the place to be, California. The land of milk and honey. That's where you go to Sunshine State. But we just have challenges right now.
KQED's California Report magazine. New episodes drop every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Deborah Treisman, fiction editor of The New Yorker and host of the New Yorker Fiction Podcast. On the podcast, I ask a great contemporary writer to select a favorite story from the magazine's almost 100-year archive to read and discuss. Together, we delve into the story, exploring its themes, its style, and what makes fiction work. You can listen to authors like Otessa Moshfegh talk about why we write.
Story, or attaching a story or creating a story, is this inclination that we all have to stop spinning.
And you can hear writers like George Saunders discuss the nature of storytelling.
On the first read, you accept these things as descriptions and they make you see the scene, but every line is a chance to inflect the reader's mind.
You'll discover new favorite authors and read old favorites in new ways. Episodes of the New Yorker Fiction Podcast are released on the first of every month. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't until the pandemic that I, like a whole lot of other people, actually started to hang out at home. I stopped going into an office downtown every day and spent more time relating to the space where I live. This was an anomaly for me, having grown up in a house with a leaky roof and water-stained ceilings, a place that I constantly wanted to escape. On the days that my husband takes our son to school, I sink into the silence of our house, get reacquainted with each room. Some walls are a snapshot in time of my child's evolving artwork. Then there's my kid's height chart in the dining room, faint penciled lines marking his growth over the past 2 years. My son will remember the memories we made here, putting up a Christmas tree in the same corner of the living room every year, where he learned to make rice and bake cookies in the kitchen, practice his cursive at the dining room table. And me? I'll remember other things. The sound of my kid's bedroom door slamming shut in anger behind him. That time that the hot water heater quietly broke and gallons of water seeped into the carpet on my birthday. My home is a vessel of living history and time, and a record of my relationship to my family, for better or worse. And because of that, my relationship with it is complicated. Donna Miskolta's relationship with her house was complicated too.
When we bought the house in 1984, it was supposed to be a fixer-upper. It was supposed to be a first house, and we would eventually move to a better place, a bigger place to raise our kids. That never happened.
When we're young, life can feel full of promise. We have hopes and dreams for better futures, for a house of our own, for a sense of refuge. And then there's the reality of fighting over the rising costs of bills, home maintenance, and how to deal with house pests. Donna's husband had to deal with whatever crawled inside the house through a hole in the roof.
We thought he trapped rats, but it turned out they were squirrels. He kept them because he didn't want to release them because they would just come right back. And so he bought this giant cage and kept it in the garage, and he looked up at how to feed squirrels. And so every morning he would chop all these fresh fruits and vegetables for them and feed the squirrels, and they would go crazy.
Donna's husband fed the squirrels for about a month until the rain stopped, and it was safe for him to get on the roof and patch the holes. Donna lived in that fixer-upper for more than 3 decades. In that house, she raised 2 girls, Natalie and Anna, who grew into their young adulthood under that tattered roof. But Donna finally reached her limit of living in discomfort, and then the furnace broke.
We had been living with space heaters, and I would live basically in 2 rooms, either the bedroom or the living room, and that's where we kept the heaters. We had just gotten so tired of living that way, that it was just like, we need to get out of here. And so we decided to sell.
Selling the family house mostly brought relief, but it also unearthed something unexpected and hidden. Welcome to 10,000 Things, a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life. I'm your host, Shinyi Pai. Today, a time capsule. What does it mean to live a good life? On the acclaimed podcast No Small Endeavor, produced by Great Feeling Studios and PRX, theology professor Lee C. Camp explores this question every week, sitting down with courageous and impassioned people from all walks of life, like Hollywood legend Rob Reiner and New York Times bestselling author Gretchen Rubin. Like our show, the podcast covers intimate stories from the past and future, from conversations on cultural Korean beauty standards with TED Talk's daily host, Elise Hu, to discussions on how our religious differences should be treasured with Interfaith America founder, Eboo Patel. Together, they'll figure out what it means to find true happiness and how we can all flourish in our day-to-day life. Don't miss out. Follow No Small Endeavor on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Find Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts. When Donna went to sell her family's old home in Seattle, she knew it wasn't going to a new family or even someone looking to flip it. It was going to a developer to be torn down and replaced. The corners and niches and doorways of memories would be gone. This made her daughter, Anna, a bit nostalgic.
She just said, could you do a video tour of all the rooms so I can have a memory of the house? And so I did that for her.
After I had watched the video of that last walkthrough of the house, I think something clicked in my mind. And I remembered the stair. And I remembered very, very fuzzily that I put something there as a child. So I asked my mom and I just said, I think there's something there. Can you just check?
I went there and there it was. And it was like lifting out some buried treasure.
And sure enough, it was there and I had left it there.
It was a blue Dutch cookie tin, a time capsule containing memories from the life of a 9-year-old Anna. The secret space that Anna Miskolta Cameron found as a kid lived at the base of the house's staircase. The whole family passed over those stairs every day.
And so all of them were painted gray except for the bottom one. It was painted white. And every time you stepped on it, it made a noise as if it were hollow. And it opened and it felt like a magical key. Like, really, like, I was just hoping it would open and then it did open.
At the time, Anna was really into reading books about princesses that lived in distant lands and olden times.
I was very interested in history and all of the time that separated me from this other person. And there's kind of there's a little bit of a morbid interest too of like the death and the drama associated with being a princess.
But Anna lived in 1999 in a post-grunge era Seattle, though there were modern pop princesses too.
That was probably the year Britney Spears' first album came out. And I remember listening to that a lot and just being immersed in pop culture generally.
She remembers staring at Britney's photo on the album cover and drinking in our culture's idea of beauty. Anna tried to emulate the sports bra and nylon sweatpants look from the Baby One More Time video.
But her sister's hand-me-down pants were too long and made ugly noises as she squeaked down the hall. Nine-year-old Anna felt pulled in many directions, caught up in the popular culture of the late 90s while feeling drawn to the simplicity of princesses and pastimes. When and where did she belong? So Anna made a time capsule, created her own treasure box of cherished items to preserve for the future.
I felt so many connections with people from the past that I had read about. And I kind of wanted to continue that chain and be a link in the chain and send my message to someone in the future too. And I guess I had in my mind that, you know, a kid that lived in that house, maybe from the next family or even generations into the future, would find it.
Reaching out to a kid across time was one way that Anna coped with a painful tween phase.
I went to an alternative school that was smaller than other elementary schools in the district, and there were very few students of color in the school.
It's an in-between age in which a profound sense of loneliness can set in. We may begin to question where we belong and whether or not there's a place for us. For mixed-race kids like Anna, who is Filipino, Mexican, and white, that loneliness has a whole other dimension to it.
There was a core of very cool kids. They were white, they were very thin, they were pretty, and they usually had money. And they formed this kind of core that you aspired to get into.
The time capsule was Anna's secret. It stayed hidden beneath the stair. Anna grew into a teenager with new questions, and daughter and mother clashed.
I don't know if my husband had been doing work on the roof, but there was a rope up there that was tied around the chimney. And she used that rope to shimmy down from the second floor of the house and leave at night.
Yeah. I think when I got into high school, things changed a lot. And we had very difficult family dynamics. I was very mad at this inability to keep the peace in our household. So I just felt like, well, it's not going to hurt anyone if I just shut up and go to my room. Later on, that lack of communication led to arguments.
Anna made it out of adolescence and through college. She was living outside of the country when Donna decided to sell the house. With home prices soaring, old houses were snapped off the market all over Seattle. Donna didn't know anything about her daughter's secret stair.
I was thinking, why didn't I not know about that stair? I was like walking up and down that stair so many times. But I always knew when I hit that last step coming down, there was a hollow sound. And it would like, you know, it would sort of rock.
The discovery of Anna's time capsule pulled Donna back to a time before struggling with her daughter. Before the silence and before the fights.
Peter Rabbit cookies.
Anna's time capsule, the blue Dutch cookie tin, used to hold her mom's sewing kit.
There's our cat, Jessie. There's our cat, Lily. Oh, this is a picture of Anna and her soccer team. And then Anna on a bridge.
There was a little silver box with little shapes brightly painted over it, purchased at one of those little Mexican craft stores. And
coins. And then also Canadian $5. And then she had this letter to the future.
A 9-year-old Anna had handwritten a letter to put inside her secret time capsule. It was sealed in an envelope that said,
"Do not open until the year 3010.
Donna was curious, but she wasn't sure if she should open it.
I kind of like the idea of having it unopened. It was sort of a sacred thing to me. And I think once it was opened, sort of that magic would disappear.
I read about Anna's letter to the future on Donna's blog.
She wrote how a letter like this felt like it needed some sort of ritual. I was producing this arts event with a live audience, and so I invited Donna to open the letter on stage with me.
Here it is. It's sealed.
Anna gave her permission to do it, but only if her mom promised to stop reading if there was anything embarrassing.
So I don't know what's in the letter, and if she had written this when she was 13, no way would I be reading it in public. But here it is, the words of a 10-year-old. Hello from the 20th century. Okay, it's a form, so she had found somewhere. So the best things in my life are my family, because I love them very much, and they're always there to support me when I need it. And also my cats, Nina, Lily, Jesse, and Piper. My personal goals for the future are to become a soccer player, a singer, or an actress. They are all very important things I like to do in my free time.
I was looking at myself, you know, projecting what I would be in the future. And, you know, I think wanting to be things like a pop star or an actress or a soccer player, that's really about the spotlight. And that's about being loved and being appreciated and being adored. They were kind of redeeming professions to a child that didn't fit in and that didn't feel loved or popular. And then there's also the part about looking outward at the world and wanting to do something selfless too.
My wishes for the future of the world are for people to stop polluting the planet and for people to stop killing, hating, and hurting.
I remember being very aware of environmental issues at a young age because of my mom's job, and she worked in recycling education. There was a contrast in that letter to the future. I want to make things better for me, and I also want to make things better for the world.
Signed, Anna Miskolta Cameron, 11/7/99. So, thank you for letting me share.
I remember that moment vividly on stage because I was there, and I remember the emotion coming into your voice and you're getting choked up. Just, it was so touching and tender.
I don't know. It felt kind of like this door opening into the past, into who this child was back then. And actually who I was back then, I think. It's hard to thinking about who you were as a mother back then, thinking about all the mistakes we made. And I'm just going to, you know, I'm just going to assume that all families at some point in their histories have some level of dysfunction, and ours was no different. And a lot of it had to do with living in a house that was not really functional.
Anna's letter and time capsule were a portal back to a time of childhood when the world still felt closely drawn and intimate. When home was a refuge from a world that didn't notice, let alone embrace, a young girl seeking to find her place. The time capsule cradled that moment and those memories.
I think we didn't really have good communication for a very long time, almost until, you know, around when Elio was born, when my son was born.
Now that she's raising her own child, there are things that we both see. And I think it's just these stages that are necessary to go through these difficult times and with time and maturation on everybody's parts. We come together in a place that's a lot stronger than before.
Recovering her daughter's time capsule allowed Donna to recognize the core parts of the open-hearted, caring young girl that Anna once was
and the parts of that identity that Anna had carried forward with her into adulthood. Anna sees it a little differently.
I look at that letter and, you know, there's a certain innocence to it, and it's sweet on the surface, but I think what I see is something a little sadder. Childhood and adolescence are periods of such deep insecurity. In mine, I felt very insecure all the time, and I felt lonely.
Even if Anna's time capsule hadn't survived the demolition of her childhood home, those moments would have lived on within who she is as a vessel of memories.
If he were to make a time capsule today, what would you put inside of it?
Well, I would put inside photos. I would put inside a letter to my son, even if he's not the one to read it. I would put inside all of these little mementos of his birth. I have a little clip of his umbilical cord that in the chaos of his birth, I just wrapped it up in plastic. And then I just left it like that. And I would let Elio decide, because I think that children should be the ones to to put together time capsules.
What do you hope for Elio when he's 10 years old?
I hope that he has a strong sense of self, and that he's kind. I just want him to know that he's enough.
A time capsule uncovers physical relics and memories that speak to a particular moment in a personal history. But what it can also contain is the key to a younger self, a person that we may be unprepared to come face to face with again. With that surprise encounter, we get to revisit who we may have once been in more complicated times, to look back at our journey, and to gaze forward at the time we have left and how far yet we have to voyage. Thanks to Anna Miskolta Cameron and her mother, Donna Miskolta, for sharing their story. Next week's object is Steelhead. 10,000 Things is produced by KUOW in Seattle. Our host, writer, and creator is me, Shin-Yi Pai. Whitney Henry Lester produced this episode. Jim Gates is our editor. The show art is designed by Eason Yang with photography from Riva Keller. Original music by Tomo Nakayama. Our production team includes Michaela Giannotti-Boyle, Hans Twite, and Brendan Sweeney. Special thanks to our community advisory group for providing feedback on this season. Partial funding of 10,000 Things was made possible by the Seattle Office of Arts and Culture's Hope Corps Grant, a recovery-funded program of the National Endowment for the Arts, plus support from the Windrose Fund. If you like this podcast, KUOW has a lot more great audio for you. Search KUOW in your podcast app and see what piques your interest. Thanks for listening.
At Soundside, we bring you news and conversation rooted in the Pacific Northwest. Hi, I'm Libby Denkman. I think of my job hosting Soundside as, number one, asking tough questions of powerful people, the questions you, KUOW listeners, want answered. And two, bringing you a daily slice of the fascinating, confounding, and often goofy side of life in Washington State. Join me for Soundside at noon and 8 p.m. on KUOW or anytime on the Soundside podcast.